This is CliffCentral.com. The Unview, the Thin, the Rich, and the Fabulous on CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, it's me, Nathan Rohr. I'm in again for Alan Ford, who is still traveling the country. If you remember last week, he was phoning us from the southernmost tip of Africa. He was calling in and making my life miserable. And we had a voice note from him today because he is in Crook's Corner, which is the northernmost tip of South Africa. And there is no signal there. Who'd have thunk? I don't know who stole the signal, the towers. Are there even towers? We'll find out later.
It is called Crook's Corner. So, you know, crooks generally steal things. So. Yeah.
Cell phones are hard to come by in Crook's Corner. I mean, I've driven around Joburg City, and there's a few corners where there are crooks.
Yeah, actually. I've been mugged on at least several of them.
So, I know you've almost been smashed and grabbed a few times.
Yeah, but that's by fans.
Yeah. Wow. Must be awesome. We're going to find out who that voice is a little bit later. Let's hear from Alan. Alan, are you there in the wild?
So, this is the Unview, the Thin, the Rich, and the Fabulous, and it's Alan Ford here. Hi, Nathan. It sounds crazy, but I'm literally in the most northern part of South Africa, a place called Crook's Corner, and a place called Pafuri Camp. It's a part of the Return Africa group. It's incredible to be able to say that a week ago I was at Cape Point, and now I'm in the most northern part of South Africa. Baobab forests. Fever tree forests, huge crocodiles, and basically Crook's Corner is where Mozambique, South Africa, and Zimbabwe meet. Brilliant history. I can't wait to tell you all about it, but I'm sorry I can't be in the studio with you, but I'm just kind of stuck in the middle of nowhere, in the paradise of South Africa. Have a good one, and a great show, and to, of course, all of you listening, have a great week ahead. Cheers.
Alan Ford there reporting from Crook's Corner, bare-chested in the wild, surrounded by alligators, using only his wits and his body hair.
I want to call Alan out. That sounded like a fake wild to me. That sounded like he was in a looped environment.
In a Scooby-Doo cartoon.
Basically, or in a Scooby-Doo,
All right, so you've heard this voice talking to me all morning, and you're like, I thought you were alone, Nathan. Well, I'm not.
You are not alone.
Thank you. Sorry, actually, when Alan Ford said that thing about where Mozambique, Botswana, and South Africa meet, I was like, there should be a dross there.
There should be a dross there.
Where good friends meet.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm in studio this morning with the wonderful Graham Watkins. Graham Watkins is an old friend of mine.
Good morning.
A colleague.
Yes.
He's everything. And I've tried to relate him to Alan's show because he also studied drama at UCT.
Yeah.
Boom. Welcome, Graham.
Welcome. I feel so welcome. Thank you for having me on this wonderful show.
Do you really feel welcome?
I do. It's a good morning. It's a nice morning.
It's a little chilly out.
It's nippy.
Are you like involved in the day yet? I know I only get involved at about 11:30.
You see, I'm forced to immediately engage in my mornings because I've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and they get you up anywhere between 4:30 and sort of call it 5:30. So within that hour, I'm forced to face every demon.
Yeah,
I'm not a morning person.
I've had lunch with Graham and his children once, and what I liken it to is having a foghorn that just goes off at your table, and then everyone just continues chatting as if there's not going on.
The Germans are coming, but everyone's like, it's fine.
Are the bombs going to start falling? Yeah, that's what it kind of feels like having a kid. It's just like this can of noise goes off, and everyone's just like, yeah, so anyway, then I went to the shops.
Yeah, because one's like super sensitive, and the other one is a bull in a china shop who makes the sensitive one become more sensitive, and he whines, and then the other one just laughs and carries on. So it's quite hectic.
Brotherly love, hey?
Brotherly love.
All right, so I promised Alan I'd try to keep this theater focused. So
yes,
let's chat a little bit about you studying theater and your illustrious theater career that you started telling me about, and I said, no, don't. Tell me on air. Tell me.
Well, it wasn't really. I was lying. I was trying to make myself appear better than I am. Well,
that's what acting's all about.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you how I got into theater. Okay, it was quite an interesting experience for me. I had an English teacher called Mr. Leon Kruger, rather. One day I was at school, I think it was in standard 6, grade 8 now, for those of you in the 20th century. I was put in Saturday detention. Our Saturday detention was for those kids who really were the most disruptive of the lot. Coming on a Saturday morning, and you had to do work around the school, whether it be weeding the grass or whatever it was, and I was put backstage in this theatre production.
We called that detention.
Yeah, but yeah. This was more like, yeah, it was, yeah, I went to a military school, so it was right. Weird. Yeah. So anyway, there was a theatre show on at the time, and I was forced to work backstage, and I fell in love. I absolutely fell in love with it, and I found an outlet for my wacky and quirky behavior.
And your exhibitionism.
My exhibitionism, yes. Involved in a lot of kind of the major productions that happened at school. And then after that, I sort of grew into this passionate theater lover. I used to go to every show, and from musicals to the most epic of dramas. I then left school. I took a sort of 1.5 to 2 year sort of break, sabbatical, where I worked to make enough money to be able to go to varsity. I then went to varsity and I enrolled at UCT. And yeah, my sort of career as I know it now, I think was definitely born there.
So what's the weirdest production you've ever been in?
Oh, the weirdest production. Sure. Well, there was one where I had to play this kind of like creepy ghost. It was very strange. But I think the weirdest one was, I forget the name, but I had to be naked on stage, right? But the whole thing was I had soiled myself. And then my helper...
In the play,
oh, okay. Yeah. So I play this general who sends this army out, but he doesn't do it properly. And the whole army gets slaughtered, and he goes... And the line is, I shat my pants. Wow. So as he says, I shat my pants, one of his servants come and proceed to clean him whilst... Now, this actually happened where I was naked, so... It was a small part in a big role that happened there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, that was probably the weirdest I've ever felt, because obviously you have to rehearse that, you know, so, and they rehearse it like sort of gradually. You start removing bits off, and then you have like cellophane over your Johnson, and yeah. Then all of a sudden you just whip it out. And I think the most awkward thing for me was the fact that I had a lot of kind of girls in my class, you know, and you have to like look at them again in the same way. But you know, the whole theater thing is like, no, it's art. It's not the same as real life, you know. It was weird. I'm just going to hashtag that.
I'm not going to lie. I would have shat my pants if they told me I needed to stand naked in front of people.
Yeah, so I stood naked, and it was on the round as well. So everybody could like...
Oh, wow. So it was 360.
It was a 360 view of me.
Sure, and that was before 360 was even
exactly.
A thing on Facebook.
Exactly, so I basically pioneered it. Yeah.
Wow. So also, in the process of, like you said, it's a process of getting naked. So every day you kind of take off an item of clothing. It's like,
and it's stressful.
Strip poker over six months.
Yeah.
So now what you know, in pornography,
yeah,
you know, they used to have a naked woman with a little star, like little stars over her nipples, yes. and her naughty bits. And then, so I want to know, at what point for a man is that? I mean, did you kind of get to like a little gold star on the end of your one-eyed Johnson?
Well, what I did was, so the day before I had to do the whole full reveal, I mean, this really stressed me out, you know. I actually gaffer taped my gentleman sausage to my inner thigh.
So wait, did you show people a little bit of sideball?
Basically, yeah. I gave them like half the show, you know what I mean? And then,
yes.
And then the big reveal happened. I think it was 2 days before opening night. So it was the kind of final dress, yeah.
To be honest, I actually don't know what's worse, like to have a piece of duct tape over your Johnson or just be naked.
Well, actually, it's removing the duct tape. That's worse, yeah.
Yeah, no,
but also, I had a poor guy, Pakamisa Zvedala, who was my manservant at the time, who basically was eye level with my bits, you know, and that I think it scarred him as much as it did me.
So was he just a short person, or was he just on his knees?
He was on his knees. Oh, so yeah, so you can just see this basically your pornography metaphor was this, yeah.
Right. Okay. Wow. So no stars for him. Hey?
No stars. Sure. Well, he got front and center. He got it right in the face.
Like, had you turned quickly, you may have been struck.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. That's an interesting story.
Yeah, man. So yeah. So that's like sort of my, and then obviously getting into music after that, and not really studying music or I had previous music experience, but not really. I never thought of it as a career. I mean, every kid wants to be a rock star when they're younger, but no one, you know, you never, you don't ever go, oh, well, I'm actually going to do it.
Yeah.
And then I kind of took my theater and my theatricality and kind of superimposed it in my music career. And I think that's why we're quite a theatrical band to watch, man.
Right. Yeah. Awesome, man. Yeah. I mean, that's such an important part. And I think it's a huge part that's often missing from bands is the performance aspect.
Absolutely.
You know,
they're
like, well, I can shred like, you know, no one's moms. And, but if you can't perform and shred at the same time, it's kind of pointless. Awesome, man. How's the music industry going? I mean, I remember last time I was in an interview with you on Cliff Central with Gareth, and you were talking, you were kind of airing a lot of kind of grievances about the industry. Has it changed? Has it gotten better?
Well, it's in a very weird space at the moment. I just think that, you know, radio is still radio, and they have these like politics that sometimes limit your ability to be able to just go, well, listen, this is good, play it, you know what I mean? But now there's like this still this whole system where, oh no, it has to be this and it has to be that, and sorry, we're a specifically gospel thing, or we're that and that and that, you know what I mean? So we're an urban radio station or Afrikaans radio station, and I just think that we need more radio stations in this country that just play music that is good, irrespective of where it comes from. I'm not saying play everything. And this whole 90% thing, I mean, Cloudy and all his glory did one thing right there, I think, my personal opinion. I think it did affect a lot of radio stations, and I think that a lot of radio stations suffered from financial sort of implications with regards to advertising and stuff like that. I know Lotus FM were really struggling, but I think it was a good thing. You know, I think maybe 60% is not a bad, or 50%, you know.
Yeah.
So you're guaranteeing at least 50% of your
content.
Yeah, of local content a week, you know, that gets added to the playlisting thing. So yeah, it's in a good space, but I still think it's nowhere near it needs to be. I mean, we've got such great talent here, you know. You have the opportunity to perform with people all the time. And I don't think it should be genre specific. I don't think we should have a radio station that plays just genre.
Yeah,
just a genre.
And I think music's changing in the way, you know, with Apple Music coming on board, people are making playlists that
huge
are so different. I mean, every song is different, really. I mean, I know you can choose to listen to similar things, and then you kind of get stuck in a bit of a hole.
Yeah,
I mean, Instagram does that to me. I mean, I like Aquaman, and then all of a sudden,
that's exactly
all I get.
Your algorithm, it like picks up your algorithm. Yeah,
so. I don't know, but I do know of a lot of people that make very diverse playlists, and it's really cool, and I think radio should be.
Well,
more
I mean,
like
Apple
that,
Music has completely changed the way I consume music. I mean, I'm finding out about bands that I would never have discovered had I not been on a platform like that. And actually, funnily enough, the other day we were listening to 8-Track, and we were just at a party. And one of our tracks came on 8-Track, and we were just like blown away, you know.
Wow.
So we're actually achieving a reach that we didn't go out and pursue. You know, we didn't put our music there and go, well, so people can consume it overseas. I mean, we got a tweet the other day from the UK going, hey, man, love your new track. I'm like, well, hey, what are you talking about? You know, so that's great, you know.
Yeah. So algorithms are interesting. Hey?
Yeah,
it's kind of funny how algorithms are basically running our lives.
That's how Trump won the US elections.
Algorithms.
Through algorithms, yeah.
Oh. It sounds like something that should be said in an Austrian accent.
Algorithms.
The algorithms.
Yeah.
Or maybe German.
Yeah.
The algorithms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Und.
I love the way that the algorithms are dictating what we are consuming.
Yeah, but
I think we should have food algorithms. If you go to the shop and you buy the Tinky, then there's an algorithm that says if you liked the hug of sponge and the kiss of the cream, then maybe you will also like the zoo biscuit.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
dangerous. It's dangerous because
then you eat very unhealthy.
Well, exactly. But also then it kind of narrows your horizon, because I mean the internet broadens your horizon, but then you've got an algorithm that sort of dictates what you get to see.
Yeah, it's basically censorship.
It's basically censorship. It's actually it's just the reverse. So basically it's the man finding his way in again and just buggering us all up the bum.
Wow. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, on that note, Graham Watkins,
thank you.
I'm actually going to invite Graham Watkins because I'm alone today. Alan Ford is wrestling bears in the wild. So Graham's actually going to now become co-host, I think, for today.
I need like a call sign or something like that, like the Vajazzler.
The Vajazzler.
News just in.
And maybe you need some theme music.
Yes.
Graham, ladies and gentlemen, Graham Watkins, the Vajazzler. What do you think?
I think it's a bit hard for bejazzling. Isn't bejazzling a sensory thing? Although it's quite cool. It's like a, it makes me feel like I'm marching into a war with you.
It's like a powerful bedazzling device.
Yeah, so basically, it's like being able to bejazzle multiple Lady Gardens at the same time.
Wow. All right. My friend, let us welcome our other guest who's been sitting here patiently listening to us banter on about theater, nudity, and the music industry.
And a very interesting man, I might add.
A very interesting man, and you don't even know the half of it yet because you haven't met him. Ladies and gentlemen, let me play the theme music. He has his own theme music. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome all the way from
Uruguay.
You're not really from Uruguay. Are you really from Uruguay?
Yeah, you made me say that.
Yes, I did. Okay. Because I have this awesome song that I want to play.
Yo me voy a Uruguay porque me gusta la gente.
Where's Luis Suarez when you need him?
Uruguay es casi siempre caliente. Uruguay es el mejor país, mejor que Francia.
After I got this song, I actually watched a few videos on Uruguay, and it's actually such an amazing place. I mean, you guys have my favorite president, or had my favorite president of all time, eh? The guy that gave half his salary to charity. He rides a bicycle, drives a Volkswagen Beetle, lives in a one-bedroom apartment, and has a dog called Manuela. I mean, he's an amazing.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that. you need to know your president from when you
were born. I feel so illiterate now,
ladies and gentlemen. Camilo, is it Camilo or Camilo?
Camilo.
Or Camilo Ramada. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Like, I'm sure, I don't even know why you're here. You know, I mean, the listeners are probably like, so who's, is he a celebrity? What is he?
Rich and awesome, right? What's the show?
Thin, rich, thin, and rich fabulous. And
fabulous. Well, I'm not rich, so I'm probably fabulous.
I'm just thin.
You guys are pretty thin in comparison to...
Thanks, man.
Some people that have been on the show.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
That makes me feel so thin.
Now, okay, so Camilo, let me turn Uruguay off. I also just...
Can I stop crying now? Because that music is so emotional.
Does it remind you of home?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, maybe this will help.
Look at this country. You are gay.
All right, so...
Old Homer Simpson.
Yeah, that's his view on your country. You are gay. Okay, so Camilo, now you're involved in so many things, I don't even know where to start with you, but the main reason I actually wanted you on the show was because I met you about a year or two ago, I don't even remember when it was, and we went to an art museum together.
That's how interesting we are.
That sounds incredible. Yeah. That's something you do with
interesting
people. Highfalutin people.
Yes.
Yeah. So now we walked around Joburg and Camilo's like, oh, have you seen this? There's this wonderful little coffee shop around here. And I'm like, wait a minute, aren't you a tourist? Like, how do you know so much about Joburg?
Yeah.
And then you kind of got me onto Meetup, which is that app.
Mm.
And so I just wanted to ask you, like, basically, like, how have you built this relationship with South Africa that you know so much more about Johannesburg than any of us? I mean, I'm pretty sure you can blow Graham's mind. All Graham thinks of when he goes into Joburg is being hijacked.
Not being hijacked. Or trying not to be hijacked.
Trying not to be hijacked.
Well, I've been there twice, and it's happened to me twice, so you can understand
those are good odds.
you can understand my fears.
Thanks a lot, man. And I think I'm just the biggest fan of Joburg, in Joburg. I'm not sure if there's a lot of fans of Joburg outside Joburg.
So. Oh, you're like a stalker. So do you stalk Joburg?
I came to Joburg in 2012. I came to South Africa in 2000 just on holiday, and I just fell in love with South Africa. And I was saying to everybody, listen, dude, South Africa is the best country in the world. And I was living in Brazil in that time. And in 2012, I came for a holiday again. And I actually thought, because I was, of course, in love with Cape Town. The jazz and the wine and the beach. And
I'm from Cape Town, so yes, I know why you love it.
Exactly. And and thanks for giving me that little note, because then I can reply that in 2012 when I went to Cape Town, I thought it was so utterly boring that I almost went home. I cut my holiday short and ended up having to spend 5 days in Joburg. And then I thought, okay, that's my city.
And you were you robbed five times, and you're like, this is the excitement I need in my life. Or what was it that made you?
That's so funny, because everybody emphasizes like the danger or the or the violence. But I was living in Brazil, so
yeah.
So yeah, I googled the crime rates one time, and in the I was living in a capital city, but in a provincial capital city. So let's say maybe I was living in a PE
East London
or in East London, and the crime rates there were higher than in Joburg. So
really,
yeah,
I suppose it is the lesser of two evils, hey.
Yeah, and as soon as I arrived there, everybody said, but dude, you're from Brazil. Brazil is the most awesome country in the world, and this is the most dangerous country in the world. And I thought, well, but this is also the most awesome country in the world, and Brazil is also. So, yeah.
And so what's awesome about it? What is the thing that attracts you?
Well, so...
The reason I ask that is because I think a lot of people that live here, we believe our own dirty press about it. Yeah, we believe, we look at the crime stats and that's all we can see. And we look at the smog and the pollution and, you know, like often we get things. And I personally know there's a lot of beauty in Joburg. Yeah. I've lived here my whole life, so I've seen it. But I want to know, as like an outsider coming in, what was it that like attracted you?
So everybody thinks, and maybe just keeping with the comparison with Brazil, you know, everybody thinks Brazil is the best country in the world, and especially South Africans think South Africa is the worst country in the world. But as you say, it's also, I think Brazilians are just better at marketing.
Right.
A Brazilian will never, ever, ever, ever say anything negative about Brazil, especially to people who are not from Brazil.
Do they really have like beautiful women
all over the place?
Really? Yeah. So there's not like these little pygmies that come from the jungle?
No, they are all over the place.
So it's not just the algorithm.
Yeah, it's not like, yeah. Yeah. They're not all isolated to one little pocket.
They're not isolated to one little pocket. And Brazil does have the most beautiful women in the world. Mm. Can't deny that.
Well, then I'm packing my luggage then.
Yeah. go for it. For it and enjoy it.
Yeah.
South Africa has when people say, for example, yeah, the bureaucracy here, but maybe by having been immersed in another country, the bureaucracy here for me is like so extremely light compared to what I'm used to in Brazil. Home affairs was a holiday. Or for example, everybody says, yeah, traffic here is so terrible. Mm. And I've lived in many cities. I don't know any city where you can, like, you have only like 1 hour of traffic jam a day, like in peak hour.
I remember LA was just a disaster. I mean, that was just awful. Yeah. It was like being in Satan's colon.
In Tokyo, they sometimes spend the night on the highway.
In Nigeria? What about Nigeria? There's like 24-hour-a-day traffic jams.
I was in Nigeria, your car there. They've got two lanes, but six cars abreast of each other, all going different directions. Yeah. I was like, I don't know how this is a system.
exactly. And I'm glad you guys now take up the cue, you know, because now suddenly you're all telling me how terrible other countries are.
Yeah, that's what we specialize in, is we find the negative in everything. We're kind of from British descent, I think.
And that
comes from just being unhappy with absolutely everything.
This place is not fancy.
Yes, it's not fancy.
Yeah, but also, you know, coming from another province, and then moving to Johannesburg, I mean, just the size of it also was something that was a little bit daunting for me in the beginning. But one thing I realized, over and above everything else, it's kind of a stereotype, but it's true. Joburg people are some of the friendliest I've ever met, you know, and they really are warm and welcoming, and they almost, it almost happens too quickly. It's like, hi, how are you? Yeah, okay, and then you're at their place for a braai, and then all of a sudden you're best mates and your kids are dating. So it's just they're really fantastic people.
Two and 4 year old?
Yeah, I know. No, well, no, not that. Those are the kids I know about. Sorry.
No, just joking. I think that's exactly what I like about Johannesburg. That it's a city that's focused on work on production. So it's very to the point and very open. Johannesburg people are very open. You can very quickly get to a conversation, to a meaningful conversation.
Absolutely.
If you have something that you want to achieve and you want to propose it, then you're very welcome to. But at the same time, it does have that maybe British way of also being honest, you know. So because in Latin America, where I'm from, you're absolutely welcome to propose a fantastic business deal, and I will say yes, and I will say yes for 3 years in a row, and I will never say no, but it's never going to happen. And,
right.
And here you can easily get to a point where somebody says, "Oh yeah, that's interesting. Let's do it," and or they will say, "No, sorry, it's not for me." And so I like that pace of specifically Joburg then.
Right. Yeah, so it is very much where the money is and where the business ideas come from, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with kind of the education systems and things around there. So speaking of work, you've done some interesting things, and I know you've actually spoken on Cliff Central before about it. The work you've done with GEMS.
Yeah, thanks.
So GEMS is basically an app that you and your partner, I think, put together here.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Cool. Yeah. So I used to work at the project at the company that developed payment software, mobile payment software. So I had that license with me when I came, and together with David Shields, my business partner, who now moved to Cape Town, by the way, and he's already.
Is he bored?
He's already speaking slower.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. He sends me these voice notes and they're just slower now.
It's the cappuccinos.
And you know, when your phone gets full, it limits your voice notes to 9 seconds. So you probably get like 10 of them in a row if his phone's full. And because, you know, you can't get full sentences out.
Full of selfies.
Yeah.
No, but so we set up this system called GEM, Going the Extra Mile, GEM. I pronounce it wrong because people say I pronounce it like jam, the stuff that you put on your bread. But it's gym, but not where you work out, but it's where in the middle.
Don't worry, I would have called it GEM.
The little diamond. And that stands for Going the Extra Mile, and it's actually a loyalty scheme like your e-bucks or your vitality scheme, but it's a loyalty scheme for good deeds. So people do good deeds and then they earn gems. And the gems, it's all on your mobile phone. It's an app. You can download the app.
So like community work, basically.
Yeah, community work.
Okay, so if I go and paint an orphanage.
Exactly. That's it. You paint an orphanage, but you don't just go anywhere, paint any orphanage. But you paint one of the orphanages that are on our network. So we've got 40 grassroots NGOs in Johannesburg, Cape Town, and we're launching Durban this Mandela month.
Awesome.
And Pretoria. And those NGOs, they organize community engagement days, and you can go there, do something meaningful, and then you earn gems. And one gem is worth 1 rand, thanks to a partnership which we have with Brand South Africa, with the Play Your Part campaign. You can spend those gems on airtime, grocery vouchers, coffee, movie tickets, data bundles, and prepaid electricity.
Wow. That is amazing. So, if you can't understand his thick Uruguayan accent, basically, get on this app, GEMS, and earn GEMS by doing good deeds. Basically, you can be your own low-level superhero.
Yeah, man.
Actually, high-level superhero.
High-level superhero. Exactly. Yeah, super-level superhero.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I really love that idea. So you do good deeds and you get rewarded for it.
And how
I think it's a great incentive.
How many people do you have using the app at the moment?
So we've got 8,000 people using the system. Yeah. It's on the App Store. It's a GEM project, which you have to look for. 8,000 people using the system. We've got we've already done more than 500 community events, or closer to 600 now. We're almost doing 50 such events every month.
So you guys have to you have to go to an event that you guys have pre-planned. You can't just click and go, I'm going to go there on Tuesday and paint.
So that's exactly what you do. You click or you just rock up there without clicking anything. The point is that those NGOs, they organize what needs to be done. because we don't have a relation with a specific community, but those NGOs have. That's exactly their added value, their value proposition, that they are in those communities or attending that specific target group. Mm. So they organize those events. So we've got children's homes, we've got community gardens, we've got youth centers, we've got in Cape Town there's a program called Surf Outreach where the kids from
surf.
Yeah,
oh, cool man.
Yeah, in Hout Bay.
And how many? Just a quick question. Sorry, how many gems do you earn per activity, or is it like a sliding scale?
Yeah.
If I paint a whole building, I get X amount.
Yeah, so we tried not to make it look like a salary. So there's not things like gems per hour. Mm. So what we do is any event that you go to, you're going to earn 30 gems, which is worth 30 rand, 30
yeah,
bucks
of airtime.
Yeah, it's a
cappuccino, man.
Yeah, exactly, at Vida Cafe.
I'll take it.
Or KFC or Checkers, ShopRite, or of course your 30 rand airtime.
I'd actually love to chat to the guys from Vida E because I know they do a lot of good things. Like, we spoke to the guy who did Cards for Humanity, or Game for Humanity, mm-hmm. which is cards that you take a card every day and it gives you something to do, like buy a stranger a cup of coffee, you know, help someone with a task. You know, it basically gives you ideas. And I think these things are so important because often the biggest problem with people getting involved is they don't know how to start. They don't know how to find something that resonates with them. And I was actually having an interesting chat with Graham this morning about addiction, like drug addiction. Mm. And the video we were kind of watching was saying that the opposite of addiction is connection. And we're living in a society that is, you know, social media everywhere, but there's no real connection. We're run by algorithms and we are actually getting further and further away from each other. Mm. And this kind of thing, gems, cards, Game for Humanity, these are the kinds of things that connect us again, I think. And I mean, that's why we often sit in our towers and like, oh, you know, this is so horrible. The crime's terrible down there, you know, and if you actually get involved, I think you get exposed to it, you become aware, you shine your awareness light on it, and
no, completely
becomes a part of you. You know?
I think it's an amazing initiative.
Thanks, man.
So cool.
Thanks so much.
I think everyone should go and download it. I just can't think of a better way to improve your community around you, and then get a little sort of like nice benefit out of it, you know. And if you want, you can donate your gems to someone who needs it as well. Why don't you take your gems, go and buy groceries for a family that doesn't have any for the month, and why not just be a complete good Samaritan?
Exactly. And it's funny that you say that, because on the app there's an option to donate your gems back, and you see a lot of people do that, because I think we've got and we're researching a little bit. I think we've got two audiences. So we've got one audience is like your suburban middle class audience that doesn't really know. You can't just walk into a township and say, "Hey guys, is there a school that I can paint here?"
Yeah.
Well, you can, but it's a little bit more daunting.
Mm. Yeah.
So now you have an app where you can see vetted programs where you know the they'll need you and they'll receive you. And you see there's an event going on, and it's also in and out. You know, you don't need to have established a relation. You can just go there, do your thing. Mm. So and that audience is like half of our audience, and then the other half of our audience is people from the surrounding community. So around that school or around that youth center that figure out, hey, Saturday I can earn 30 bucks of airtime or 30 bucks of electricity. Mm. And so some people are more motivated by, as you say, Jonathan, the opportunity to get to connect, and other people are more motivated by the rewards, and that's exactly
I think either way the benefits are still there, you know.
Completely.
Like, exactly.
Whatever your motivation, I've often said, you know, someone will convert to a religion, and I always say, and then people say, oh, you know, but they're not really that involved, you know. But you know, the good rubs off, you know.
Yep.
There's definitely going to be a benefit from whatever they're faking. If you fake being a good person, what is the downside to that? You know?
Yeah. So. No, exactly. And on the other hand, we know we incentivize so many things, you know. We incentivize flying with a certain airline or filling up at a certain petrol station. So why not incentivize good deeds?
And also on that, I mean, you mentioned how daunting it is going into a township. I mean, I've done quite a bit of work in townships, and you actually realize how welcoming those people are.
Mm.
And once you're in there, you're like, oh my gosh, this is actually not as bad as I imagined. It's not Mordor, you know. The orcs aren't coming to hack you to pieces.
Johannesburg
is actually
worth
fantastic.
Yeah, Johannesburg is worse.
Oh yeah, right? Market Street on a Sunday is so scary just to drive.
No, but I mean, I'm
but you're absolutely right. And there's a strong sense of community in townships.
Yeah.
I definitely think that townships is definitely not the most dangerous place necessarily.
And you know, that sense of community would, if you go and experience it, you start having it rub off on you, and you try and build your own suburban community. You know, I mean, it's nice to know your neighbor.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you say that, because community engagement is not about poor people. So we've done a lot of community engagement activities in we did, for example, community cleanup in Lone Hill. We've done a community cleanup in Greenside in Melville. So it's not necessary. Suburbs also need community. We're all community. So I'm glad you point that out, because otherwise we think, oh yeah, community things. Yeah, that's for the poor people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? Raking. Going in on a Saturday morning and raking an old lady's garden for her is as rewarding as painting an orphanage.
I always used to say to people, if I ever, because people used to come up to me and say, you know, you should have your own church, and I'd be like, wow, that's quite a statement. And I did think about it, and I was like, wow, what I'd actually do is actually get people together on like a Saturday, or on a Saturday I'd go around the community and knock on doors and be like, hey, is there anything you need done, like, does your computer need to be fixed? Does your wall need to be painted? Whatever. And then on Sunday morning, you get your congregation together in like a parking lot somewhere. You don't even need a building. And then you go to people's houses and help them and do whatever you want. And you don't need to preach to them even.
Exactly,
it's just bettering the world, you know.
But you can't spray doom in their eyes.
Yes, I think that's the
that is the
best
is the,
part about
that's
religion.
That's the best way to do it,
yeah. Yeah, Graham actually told me a story about a pastor in Brazil, I think it was, or Argentina.
One of those.
Somewhere in South America. You'd probably know better, Camila. But the pastor convinced people that his semen was blessed by God, and he would make women perform
acts of kindness.
In front of the congregation. I'm just like, wow, how are people this easily misled?
I'm not sure I even want to think about that.
No, I'm sure
I actually
don't.
Prefer your idea of painting. I'd rather go and paint something than have
someone paint on you.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So let's move on. It's almost tea time. And I wanted to, before tea time at 2:15, I wanted to ask you about another thing that you're involved in.
Oh, boy. Oh, yes. Boy. What have I done?
Waffles. Now,
you're a
gourmet waffle designer.
Jono Graham, you guys, you need to eat more waffles.
Yes,
waffles
I agree.
Doctors actually say you should have 8 waffles every single day.
Twice on Saturdays.
Yeah, and waffles make you happy. That's one thing, you know. And waffles only have the good carbs. So building on that, funny enough, my the same business partner, David Shields, he was backpacking in Latin America, and he ran into a little place called Buffalo Waffles, where there was always a big line, and what these guys did, they make your American waffle, not your Belgian waffle. Your Belgian waffle is that thick square waffle. Your American waffle is round like a pancake, and just a little bit thicker than a pancake. It's like a pancake with the abs. And then they used to fill it up with all kinds of delicious Chilean savory fillings.
Wow.
And he asked them, guys, how did you guys come up with that? And they say, no, we didn't come up with that. We were backpacking in Argentina and there were some guys doing it. So then he thought, okay, well, if you guys can do that, I can do that. So, we set up Woodstock waffles. Woodstock, not like in Cape Town.
Yes.
Don't start getting happy. It's Woodstock like the rock event in New York
both,
State.
Both make me happy.
Good. So we've got Woodstock waffles. It's love yourself. It's about happiness.
Yeah.
And making people happy by making the most delicious waffles in Johannesburg and now Cape Town. It's like a waffle wrap. It's a wrap, but it's a waffle.
And it's savory.
It's a wrap. We've got savory and sweet.
Oh wow! Okay.
And so we've got for example, your Hendrix with the creamy garlic mayo, pepper pepper jew mix, rocket, Portuguese chicken prego filet.
Oh wow!
I want one right now.
Yeah, and I have grated cheddar. Sriracha sauce.
Did you bring any in your backpack?
Yeah, yeah, I've got three for you.
Fantastic.
Guys.
When you said David Shields got the idea from backpacking in Latin America, I just picture for some reason, I know stereotypes. I'm picturing him in like Peru, like on top of the mountain at like 10,000 feet above sea level, and he bumps into like buffalo waffles, and there's a long line. It's like, wow, these people climbed a really high mountain to get this waffle.
Exactly, and it was like one of these Inca dudes, you know?
Yes, yeah.
With a serious face, you know?
And a crystal skull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how it was. And, yeah. That's, you probably saw the pictures.
And I guess those guys, when they were backpacking in Argentina, you know, what they saw. I mean, I don't even know. I've never been to Argentina.
So there you go, guys. Waffle shrouded in mysticism. Go and try them.
That's exactly it. And if you're ever at the Four West Farmers Market or at Market on Main, or happen to stumble around the Cape Town and run into our little food truck,
I will see you on Sunday.
Then definitely.
At the market.
Definitely. You got to come. You got to come for breakfast, and then after that you come for lunch, and then you come for dessert.
Deal.
And we also do midnight snacks.
Ooh, have wow. a big family.
Good.
Two growing boys.
You need
the good carbs.
They need the good carbs.
Yeah. All right. So we were supposed to chat to a lady by the name of Swati Martin right now. You know, you were talking about Joburg and these gems in Joburg. Like these little places that you find. And, like, you know, Maboneng's become like Hipsterville. It's like so fancy, so fantastic. All these great little places. There's a little place called Pata Pata where I had lunch yesterday. But I also dropped by a little place called the Yaswara Tea Room. Now, this lady we're going to speak to, Swati Martin. We can't get hold of her. She's in France.
That's really chic.
Yeah. So you can really see how fancy this place is.
Yeah.
She's in France. She's
Ivorian.
She's
fancier than Graham and me together, I think.
Yeah. She'd put you guys to shame. She's beautiful as well. She's stunning. She's Ivorian from Côte d'Ivoire.
Yeah.
Voir. And then, so she started this. She used to be she was the acting CEO, I know, at one stage for GE Technologies. And she basically left the corporate world and went into empowering African tradesmen and artisans. So she started with tea and home appliances and stuff. So she's opened this tea room in Maboneng. It is the most beautiful spot you'll ever sit in. It's this Moroccan kind of vibe. Everything's gold and or rose gold, and oh, it's just so beautiful. They've got all these teas. I had a tea called Makeda of Sheba, which is like a rooibos raspberry and champagne.
Oh my goodness!
Flavored tea. Yeah, and what I really wanted to actually just chat to her this morning about was what she's doing for the African luxury brands, because to go into the luxury brands in South Africa or Africa, she's got places in Cote d'Ivoire, Nigeria, and South Africa. And to go into luxuries is such an interesting thing for me, because I don't think a lot of Africans go into that because they don't know that there's actually the market for it.
Mm.
And she's, which I find quite hopeful in a way, you know, she's going into Africa to target the luxury market.
But
I think
that's such such a fantastic point, because Africa is always identified with poverty,
yes.
Right?
And, yeah,
and Africa is such a prosperous and fertile land, you know.
Yeah.
And I think Africa has a history of prosperity and of luxury.
Yeah.
I think that is so much more empowering than that poverty focus.
Yeah, we've started believing the algorithm or the press of America.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you think Africa and you think of a starving child with flies around their mouth, you know, kind of thing. And that's really not what it is at all. And what the one thing Swati's doing that's amazing is it's actually also increasing a lot of Asian tourism to Africa based on the fact that there's luxury brands here now. And I mean, because that's what they're interested in. I mean, you think of Asia, and obviously they've got a lot of wealth there, but the luxury brands are all kind of made in Europe and the States, and that's why they travel there so much to get these luxury items. And now that she's doing luxury stuff in Africa,
and it's all made here,
all made by African farmers grow the tea, African artisans make the jewelry and the clothes and stuff that she sells, and it's beautiful. I really encourage anyone to just pop in at the Yaswara Tea Room, have a pot of tea, and you'll feel so fancy. It's really, really luxurious. Cool. So anyway, if in case you haven't heard about
that, I'm a bit upset now because Graham is not going to grab a tea and not a waffle.
No, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go across, grab a tea, get a waffle, and have the two together. In fact, why don't you guys cross-pollinate your brands?
We should.
And then I'll be happier.
The world will be happier.
Yes.
Everybody will be happier.
Fancy tea and waffles.
I think fancy waffles are... like luxury
African waffles, African artisan. Luxury waffles.
You got to drop the hipster words like artisanal, yeah,
gourmet,
bespoke
waffles. Oh, bespoke
waffles. Yeah, with little legs.
Do you know what a bespoke waffle is?
I hope so, but I'm not sure.
Well, bespoke is
the way
means,
you look at me.
Means custom made.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that,
yeah.
That means you could just basically say, yes, would you like a bespoke waffle? What would you like on it?
Exactly.
Essentially.
And so that waffle is only once off, only for you.
Yes, yeah. And that's actually what, I actually learned this a while back. I did an opening for a luxury brand in Sandton City a while back. And I almost vomited blood when I saw the price of a handbag they were selling. I think it was 200,000 rand for a handbag. And I said to the lady, I was like, I'm sorry, but like, even if this was made out of solid gold, which it isn't, I can see it's made out of black leather and it has sequins on it, which I know are not expensive. Like, why is that so expensive? And she said, well, it's made by the designer himself, first of all, so that ups the price. Mm. And also, there's only one made.
Mm.
So I'm like, so just because there's one, some lady is like, yes, I think I should take that bond out and buy that handbag.
Do you know how embarrassing it is to walk into a reception and somebody else has the same handbag as you?
I don't, actually.
Well, have you ever gone to a party and someone's wearing the exact same T-shirt and maybe similar jeans?
I see that as a point of connection. I'm like, hey, brother, we're dressed the same.
Yeah.
I feel connected to you. We should do a gems project together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't see the downside.
Yeah. But maybe it's more in the handbag department.
Where, see, I think with girls, it's like, oh, my gosh, where'd you get that handbag? It's only one of a kind. I hate you, but I love you. I want to be you, but I also want to murder you.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing they like.
Right. Okay.
I might have just generalized a little.
Maybe. I think we've just elevated luxury brands and then brought them right back down to earth, which is great. Guys, we have 8 minutes left. I'd really like to talk to you guys about just ideas. I like ideas. I was going through my YouTube subscriptions the other day. I was telling Graham, and I look at all the things I watch, and I'm looking at science and religion and ideas. And then I accidentally clicked on trending, and it was a video about Zodwa's butt at the Durban July. And I didn't actually care. And I just think, like, I want to talk about ideas with you guys. You guys are both ideas, man. Mm. What's going on in your brains? Tell me.
Sure.
Nothing. Still too early?
Yeah. Blank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that people should be more open to things that seem completely impossible and aren't very believable. For example, like, I stumbled across the flat earth theory the other day. That's a huge thing that we should unpack. We actually have to have a whole show for that. But I just urge everyone to go and watch a video on that. It's really interesting stuff.
The flat earth. It is interesting. Guys, I'm just sorry. We actually got Swati on the line. So do you guys want to hear this luxurious brand lady that I've been talking about? Swati, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing? How is the weather in France?
It's beautiful and very hot.
Fantastic. Ours is exactly the same. It's beautiful but very cold. Swati, thank you so much for talking to me. I was just bragging to the guys on the radio show about the Yeswara Tea Room in Maboneng. I went there yesterday and I had your Makita of Sheba tea, and it was just absolutely fantastic. I'm so blown away by the decor in that place. How did you have a hand in the decor?
Yeah, I mean, I collaborated with Mia Widlake of Studio 19 to create the universe of Yeswara, but obviously we have a strong brand identity and universe. So I guess also as I created Yeswara and the products, I also envisioned the environment in which this product and the brand would live. And so we basically just worked together. I sourced products from her brand. Some products I sourced in Morocco. So I guess you sat in the Moroccan-inspired lounge. And the idea is really to create that sense of community and communion, but also being in Mabonang is, although we are an, I would say an upscale brand, it is very important for us to be inclusive and be in that environment where everyone is welcome, because tea is really that welcoming drink.
That is true.
So that was really, I would say, the thinking around the decor and the universe. It really was born from the brand itself, but also really adding that element of inclusiveness, community, soulfulness, but also that little oasis in the middle of a very vibrant Mabonang.
Brilliant. I was also talking to my guests in studio here about the fact that you've decided to go with a luxury brand from Africa. And your business, I don't know, how old is Iswara now?
So we're in our fifth year, so we're 4.5 years old.
Okay, and so and when you started this this company, why did you decide to go with luxury? I mean, we were just talking about how inspiring it is that there's an African luxury brand that's just breaking borders all over the world and exporting and getting tourism into Africa because of it. What made you decide to go with luxury brands?
Well, I think it's very much I would say what I call the Robin Hood model, in the sense that if you look at Africa today, and quite frankly the rest of the world, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And in a way, if you're catering to the higher echelon of society, so let's say the upper middle class, high net worth individuals and ultra high net worth individuals, providing high quality products to that group, you're actually able then to trickle down the revenues from whatever you've sold to them into the lower echelon of the society, which is really, I would say, the majority of Africa, where you are able to pay better wages to people, buy better products from farmers, give them also, buy their products at a better price, source products that are of much value to them, etc. So it's really that, I think that's what's also quite transformative. People a lot of times see luxury as, oh, Africa is so poor, why would you create a luxury brand in Africa? But I firmly believe that you do need also these higher quality products, because these are the ones that are ultimately going to assist in transforming and redistributing the wealth as well into all of the, I would say, production chain, because people who are making those, in our case, the free products are the small enterprises, the small packager, the all kind of SMEs and even smaller artisans and farmers. So you're actually able now to source products from them and pay them at a better price.
Brilliant.
As well.
Brilliant.
So that was really the idea. It's also, I would say, economic redistribution.
Well, brilliant. Thank you so much, Swati, and thank you for being on the show. Sorry, we're running out of time, so I have to cut it a bit short. But thank you so much for chatting to us, and good luck to you in the future with that. And I really love that you're doing an African company run in an African way, and you're just doing so, so well. So we're very, very proud of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Have all a great day. Bye.
All right, so that's tea, guys. And with that, here's a little closing advert for tea in general. And maybe you can apply this to waffles as well.
Yay! So many different uses and remedies from so many different teas! Antioxidants! Chamomile!
Relaxing!
Hibiscus!
It's kind of sweet!
Darjeeling!
A taste of Asia!
Genture Tamer!
Ajay!
Slow push into the tea!
Yeah!
It's in my veins!
Explosion!
Blow on it! Tough!
Don't slurp! It's rude!
Enjoy the flavor!
I like to smell it first!
Ah!
Empires will fall! A steam will rise!
Dip it! Dip it! Sip it!
The Unview. The Thin, the Rich, and the Fabulous on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.